The Micro Language Lab, Learning the 6809, is a presentation of Green Mountain Micro.
Have you ever typed in a long assembly language program listing from a magazine, accepting on faith that it would work on your color computer, and then finding out that your XYZ disk system or your Apex memory dewormer was already using that area of memory? Well, within certain limitations, that inflexible approach to memory use isn't necessary anymore. Utility programs, especially those in semi-permanent installations such as the XYZ disk or the Apex dewormer, should be able to be moved to other areas of memory and still perform their advertised functions. Until the introduction of the 6809, microprocessors couldn't offer this as a standard feature, a feature known as position-independent programming. Your color computer can do that. Position-independent programming is the topic of this session. To understand position independence, you have to understand the limitations of position dependence. Have a look at the program in the book. The mnemonics read, load X, 1, 2, 3, 4, load Y, immediate, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then loop, load A, FF, 20, branch if EQ, that is, branch if equal to later, and then jump loop, and then later says clear 0001. Well, there's nothing especially useful about this program, but it's good enough code, and the A accumulator is being loaded from what looks like an input port address, and branching to the label later if the loaded value is zero. If it's not, the program jumps back to the position marked loop. Well, what if you needed to move this program from address 1000 to, for example, address 2000? Well, if you were the programmer, you would simply load the source code into the EdTASM Plus program and reassemble at the new origin. But if you had purchased the program and didn't know its structure or contents, but nevertheless needed to move the binary code from 1000 to 2000, something very unhappy would occur. Everything in the program would seem perfect until it reached that jump to label loop. As far as the binary code is concerned, that jump is specifically to address 1007. You can see it right there in the binary code. 1007 is an absolute fixed address. With a program now residing at 2000, trouble would be on the way. By contrast, the program branch to label later is relative addressing. The branch is measured from the current position of the program counter. You see that? Jump moves to a known, numbered, fixed memory location. BEQ, branch on equal, moves to a new position relative to wherever the program is now. Now, I did use jump in this example when I could easily have used branch always, BRA. But what if the jump were to an address so 5,000 addresses away? An ordinary branch can't move that far, since it's limited to relative movement between plus 127 addresses and minus 128 addresses. And what about subroutines? The opcode JSR always requires a fixed address. And then there's always the problem of loading X and Y registers with the locations of important tables of information found within the limits of the program. How can these fixed memory locations be identified by some other way? It seems that you have to identify these by their fixed locations. Those are, in fact, the frustrating questions of position independence. How to avoid specifying a fixed numerical address anywhere in the program? Well, you can probably guess that I wouldn't be asking those rhetorical questions if I didn't already have an answer. And you're right. The 6809 commands jump and JSR can be cashed in for the 6809's flexible branch and long branch commands. Not only can you execute long branches to any relative position throughout all of memory, but you can perform long branches to subroutines in any relative position throughout memory. And those load immediate instructions can be cached in for what's known as program counter relative indexing. The price you pay for these relative branches or indexing is an additional clock cycle or two on each instruction, plus a slightly different process of thinking. Everything can become relative to the program counter, not just short and long branches, but even loads and stores. Loads and stores can make use of the special PCR version of the indexed addressing mode. Before I get carried away with the excitement of generalities about this kind of programming, I want you to do a little reading. Open your MC6809E data book, turn to page 17, and read the section headed Program Counter Relative. Also read page 18, the heading LEAX, LEAY, LEAU, LEAS. And finally, turn to page 32 and read the summary of the 6809's short and long branch instructions.
Turn to the MC6809E data book, page 17, and read the section headed Program Counter Relative. Also turn to page 18 and read the section headed LEAX, LEAY, LEAU, LEAS. Finally, turn to page 32 and read the summary of the 6809's short and long branch instructions. Return to the tape when you have completed the reading. Turn the tape off now.
Let me start with the LEA instructions, which are easier to use than to describe. You can be looking at page 18 of the booklet as I talk. LEA, Load Effective Address, is really no mystery. It's just a highly jargonized name for an old familiar concept. Here's how LEA came clear to me. There exist no unique increment and decrement instructions for the 16-bit X or Y registers in the 6809. Considering how often I wanted to move these registers forward or back in memory, I thought this might be a serious deficiency in the 6809's capability. Sure, you know there are automatic increment and decrement modes in the indexed addressing mode, but these require loading or storing information to get them to work. So I spent some time cracking my brains over LEAX and LEAY. I discovered that increment X is actually LEAX 1, X. That is, make X become X with an offset of 1. Decrement X, then, must be LEAX minus 1, X, and sure enough it is. It seemed clumsy then, but not now. Maybe these are a little less easy to think of or use than a straightforward increment or decrement, but they are many times more flexible. If LEAX 1, X makes X become X plus 1, then LEAX 2, X makes X become X plus 2. You're no longer limited to simple increments or decrements. LEAX 40, X makes X equal X plus 40. LEAX minus 40, X makes X equal X minus 40. LEAY 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Y makes Y equal Y plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's the key. I began to understand that the clumsy phrase load effective address was a jargon-filled way of saying the same thing that good old let says in BASIC. Whereas BASIC would say let y equals y plus 150, the 6809 assembly language says LEAY 150 comma y. Load y with the effective address 150 comma y. But there's more than that. Not only can X equal X plus 10 by writing LEAX 10, X, but X can equal Y plus 10 by writing LEAX 10, Y. Or Y can equal S minus 50 by writing LEAY minus 50, S. Or U can equal X by writing LEAU 0, X. In fact, depending on your requirements, the 6809 processor offers three different ways of making one 16-bit register equal another. You've got transfer X, Y. Then there's PSHS X followed by PULS Y. And then there's LEAY 0, X. Here's more about load effective address. You can use A, B, or combination D accumulators as variable offsets. For example, X can be made equal to A plus X by writing LEAX A, X. But by far the most versatile and powerful application of the LEA instructions is in the writing of position-independent programs. In the programs I've presented so far, I've always loaded the X or Y registers with specific values. For example, in the LIFE program that was presented in the past few lessons, you remember that the X register was pointed to a table of information by loading the X register with the actual address of the table. I wrote LDX, number sign table, load X, immediate table. But there's another way, a position-independent way. I might instead have written LEAX table, PCR. That's LEAX table, PCR. And that says load X with the effective address calculated from the distance between the present position of the program counter and the address of that table. In other words, I know the distance from here to where I'm going. By giving that distance to the 6809, it can calculate the resulting address and then put that result in the X register. LEAX table, PCR means load X with the effective address calculated from the distance between the present position of the program counter and the address of the table. No longer are you constrained to a fixed address. Instead of demanding to know where is it, the 6809 need only ask, how far is it from here? I'll get back to load effective address. In the meantime, just remember that when you see LEAX, think let X. You see LEAY 10, Y, and you think let Y be 10 plus Y. Purists just might want my head for that, but I'll risk it. When you see LEA, think let. Among the other position-independent commands are the branches. You've been using the branches since early on in this course, but I've never given them any formal time, and so I'll make up for that now. Like the program counter-relative instructions, the branches are also based on how far from here rather than specifically where. In all, there are 62 variations of relative branches, depending on how you think of them. Turn to page 32 of the MC6809E data book. You'll see the branch instructions in four groups: simple, simple conditional, signed conditional, and unsigned conditional. Some overlap, serving dual purposes. I'm going to describe the short branches, but keep in mind that the long branches are identical in principle and application. The only difference is that the short branches reach a span of 256 bytes, and the long branches reach a span of the entire memory of 65,536 bytes. Simple branches are just that. When the instruction decoder finds a simple branch, it follows the command, calculates the new address, and hands it to the program counter. These three are branch always, branch never, and branch to subroutine. Two of these make sense, branch always and branch to subroutine. But what about branch never? Branch never is one of those delightful bizarrities of computer logic. Branch never exists as a default of the processor's architecture. Processor's architecture is logic. All branches have what are called true and false versions. Branch always is the true version, so branch never is the consequentially false version. Branch always makes the branch very much like the command jump. Branch never continues with the main program flow, but keep it in mind, it's surprisingly useful. Should you be doing critical timing where every machine byte and clock cycle counts, remember that no operation, no op, uses one byte in two cycles. Branch never has the effect of a no op, because it continues with the program flow, but it uses two bytes in three cycles. And long branch never also has the effect of a no-op, but it uses 4 bytes and 5 clock cycles. Enough of the simple branches, and on to the simple conditional branches. These are changes of program flow conceived of as direct responses to the condition codes. First, branch on minus and branch on plus are in response to the state of the negative flag. Second, branch on equal and branch on not equal are in response to the state of the zero or Z flag. Third, branch on overflow set and branch on overflow clear respond to the state of the overflow or V flag. And finally, branch on carry set and branch on carry clear respond to the state of the carrier C flag. Those 8 conditional branches should make sense to you since I've used most of them in programming already. The signed and unsigned conditional branches take account of not only the flags, but also the type of arithmetic being used, in order to produce a composite result and make a branching decision. The signed conditional branches assume that you are using signed arithmetic, that is, where you are thinking in terms of positive and negative, so that the most significant bit is important to the calculation. There are 3 types of signed conditional branches arranged 5 ways. First, there's branch on greater than, BGT, and its opposite, branch on less than or equal to, branch, BLE. Remember that in signed arithmetic, 0, 1 is greater than FE, that is, 1 is greater than minus 1, signed arithmetic. Secondly, the complementary instructions to the previous ones are branch on greater than or equal to, BGE, and branch on less than, BLT. Third, signed branches also make use of the familiar branch on equal, BEQ, and branch on not equal, BNE. And then 4 and 5, I'll group them together, the final 2 pairs are identical to the first 2 pairs, but are conceived in reverse. At the end of this lesson, take the time to examine the 4 tables at the bottom of page 32 of the data booklet, and try to clarify how the pair branch on greater than, branch on less than or equal to, is different in conception from branch on less than or equal to, and branch on greater than. The remaining branch types are the unsigned conditional branches. These are effectively identical to the previous ones, but negativeness or positiveness do not affect the result. The branches are, first, branch on higher than, BHI, and its opposite, branch on lower than or same as, BLS. In unsigned arithmetic, FE is greater than 0, 1, that is, 254 is greater than 1. Second, branch on higher than or same as, BHS, and its opposite, branch on lower than, BLO. Third, the familiar branch on equal and branch on not equal are also part of the unsigned branches. And 4 and 5, again grouped together, there are the inverse pairs of the first sets of conditions. Again, examine the tables at the end of the lesson to determine how BHI and BLS, BHS, and BLO are different in reverse conception. How do all these branches fit together? And how do you choose among the simple conditional, signed conditional, and unsigned conditional branches? Well, here is exactly how. If you're using the flags directly, such as with rotations, yes-no comparisons, and so forth, use the simple conditional branches. If you're thinking about the condition codes per se, then you want to use simple conditional branches. Here's the next consideration. If you're doing arithmetic, such as creating mathematical subroutines, or if you're using numbers transferred from BASIC, use signed conditional branches. Real numbers are positive and negative, so use signed conditional branches when you're doing that kind of math. And finally, if you're making a series of value comparisons or checking table entries, then use the unsigned conditional branches. These are similar to the simple conditional branches, except that they allow you a little more flexibility or programming compactness and a slightly different kind of concept. Some experimenting will make the choices clear. I've got a program I think you'll like. Get your computer on and up in Extended BASIC. When you're ready, type and enter this BASIC line, following your book while you type this. PClear 8, colon, PMode 4, 1, colon, PCLS, colon, PMode 4, 5, colon, PCLS, colon, CLOADM, colon, exec. And you're going to follow that in your book, so you can sort of stop the tape if you need to enter that line. We're on page 160. Your computer will be ready and searching for an object code when you finish this line, and that object code is coming up next on the tape.
Program number 28 is an object code program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now.
You've loaded and automatically executed that program. BASIC started by clearing an area of graphics memory, so what you should be seeing is a clean, high-resolution graphics screen with a narrow, random-looking band of colors walking down the screen from top to bottom. At the same time, a continuous tone is coming from the loudspeaker of your television. The tone hiccups slightly each time the colored band moves down the screen. Now, before you sigh and say, "So what?" to yourself, let me tell you what you're actually looking at. The band of random color isn't quite so random at all. The band of random color is the program. The program itself is being displayed as if it were screen information. Now, that shouldn't be a surprise to you, since memory is memory is memory is memory, so far as the microprocessor is concerned. But it can be disconcerting to actually snoop into the program's private memory layer. Now to my point. The band of color is moving. The program is producing a tone, then moving itself, erasing its trail, and re-executing itself in a new position in memory. Eventually, the loudspeaker will let out a strangled squawk, and the program probably return an OK to your screen as the moving program crashes into the unwritable BASIC ROM. The point, this is a completely position-independent program. When you're ready, you can load the assembly source code and have a look. I'll be back in the next lesson with a complete walkthrough of this program, and a re-explanation and summary of the process of position-independent code. Enjoy this when you're snooping in the memory and watching that naked program at work. Till later.
Find program number 29 in the book and follow the instructions. This is an EdTASM Plus program. Turn this tape off until you are ready to load the program. Turn the tape off now. You should have loaded an EdTASM Plus program. Display this program using the P command and compare it to program number 29. If it appears correct, please continue with this tape. Otherwise, rewind to the program listing and try again.